Hello there, and welcome to The Monarchy with me, Samson Sees, here on Press TV. As always, we give you the alternative stories concerning the one and only Great Britain. Indeed, it's all quite different from the content you'd usually come across on the mainstream media, so sit tight. Coming up on today's programme... Just before we hit today's topics, here are the latest news headlines regarding Britain.
The European Union is examining the potential violation of the EU law over revealed tapping of global communications and sharing of gleaned data with the United States. The revelations of Britain's large-scale eavesdropping operation, codenamed Tempra, have led to outrage among European governments. A hidden microphone has been found in the office of Ecuadorian ambassador to Britain, Ana Alban, as WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange remains holed up in the building for fear of arrest by the British police. The embassy is under 24-hour watch by the London Metropolitan Police, who are instructed to put the Australian under arrest if he ever exits the embassy building. The British Channel 4 TV's decision to broadcast the Muslim call to prayer every morning during the upcoming holy month of Ramadan has been branded as a publicity stunt. The move was described as a brilliant idea by the Muslim Council of Britain. Four Muslim graves have been desecrated with racist graffiti in a cemetery in Wales in the latest anti-Muslim incident in Britain, following the murder of British soldier Lee Rigby back in May. The vandals left statements on the graves like "White Power" with slogans for the far-right British National Party, the UK Independence Party and the National Front, also placing their mark on the graves in the Christchurch Cemetery in the Newport area of Wales. Lieutenant General Benny Gantz, Chief of Staff of the Israeli regime's army, arrived in the UK on Tuesday for the first such visit by an Israeli army chief since 1998. The UK government granted Gantz's trip the status of special mission, thus granting him immunity from the UK's criminal justice system. A week earlier, the UK government also applied special mission status to the visit of Major General Doron Almog, a retired army official suspected of war crimes, granting him immunity from Britain's criminal justice system. Following the revelations that Britain supports armed terrorist groups in Syria, Home Office Intelligence Chief Charles Farr has warned that many of the same militants want to attack the UK. With Al-Qaeda-inspired militants in Syria, Farr warned that there have never been so many terror groups and extremists so close to Europe.
When is a military coup not a military coup? When it happens in a friend of Britain's country, and when British figures are happy about it, apparently. Not for the first time in the history of Britain, a coup is not a coup.
The army takes over, deposes and imprisons the democratically elected president, suspends the constitution, arrests the usual suspects, closes down television stations, and mass their armor in the streets of the capital.
لقد كان الأمل معقودا على وفاق وطني يضع خارطة مستقبل ويوفر أسباب الثقة والطمأنينة والاستقرار لهذا الشعب بما يحقق طموحه ورجاؤه إلا أن خطاب السيد الرئيس ليلة أمس وقبل انتهاء مهلة 48 ساعة جاء بما لا يلبي ويتوافق مع مطالب جموع الشعب الأمر الذي استوجب من القوات المسلحة استناداً على مسؤوليتها الوطنية والتاريخية التشاور مع بعض رموز القوى الوطنية والسياسية والشباب ودون استبعاد أو إقصاء لأحد تعطيل العمل بالدستور بشكل مؤقت يؤدي رئيس المحكمة الدستورية العليا اليمين أمام الجمعية العامة للمحكمة إجراء انتخابات رئاسية مبكرة على أن يتولى رئيس المحكمة الدستورية العليا إدارة شؤون البلاد خلال المرحلة الانتقالية ولحين انتخاب رئيسا جديدا.
But the word coup does not and cannot cross the lips of any of the British figures. No one in the British establishment dares to utter such an offensive word. Perhaps they are too busy with their plans in Syria to bring democracy to its nation.
It is the problem with a military intervention, of course, that it is a precedent for the future. And that if this can happen to one elected president, it can happen to another. Future, and that's why it's so important to entrench democratic institutions and for political leaders, for all their sakes and the sake of their country, to work on this together, to find the compromises that they haven't been able to make in Egypt over the last year. Now, we can't lay that down from outside. No other country can decide on that. Only Egyptian leaders can put that together, but we hope they will do so.
It is not for this country to support any single group or party. What we should support is proper democratic processes and proper government by consent. Very clear messages have been sent to President Morsi, including by President Obama, who spoke with him directly, but we have also been communicating through our ambassadors that yes, he has a democratic mandate and we respect that, but democracy also means ensuring that everyone has a voice and that leaders have a responsibility to represent all Egyptians and show they are responsive to their concerns. That is what the government needs to do in order to bring about peace and stability in that country.
Is it because they fear that to acknowledge it's a coup would force Britain to impose sanctions on the most important Arab nation at peace with Israel? Or perhaps Britain is not too alienated with coups around the world and prefers to keep it as an exclusive brand for itself? After World War I, Britain decided to plot a coup to bring an end to the Bolsheviks' penetration of Iran for the threat it imposed on British possessions in India. Therefore, in February 1921, British officials who were dismayed by the Qajar dynasty in Iran put Reza Pahlavi on the throne by providing his troops with ammunition, supplies and pay to help them seize control of the capital city of Tehran in the coup they plotted themselves. Moreover, in 1953, Britain's secret intelligence agency, MI6, and the United States Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, organized a coup to remove the then-elected Prime Minister, Mohammad Mossadegh. British officials then propped up the increasingly brutal regime of the Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, until its collapse in 1979.
But that is not all. As there is no end to Britain's decades of subversive activities and imperialistic interests?
In 1939, the cooperation between Yugoslav Intelligence Service and British spying agencies was intensified after the occupation of Austria and annexation into Nazi Germany. But the two countries' combined intelligence operations did not last too long, as Britain's policy towards the government of Yugoslavia had shifted from acceptance of its neutrality to pressurizing the country for support in the war against Germany. It was then, in March 1941, when Britain planned and directed the Yugoslav coup d'etat, with British intelligence services supporting the coup plotters. The 1941 Yugoslav coup led to the overthrow of Prince Paul and brought to power the 17-year-old King Peter II. There are also reports that Mark Thatcher, the son of former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, pleaded guilty in relation to the 2004 Equatorial Guinea coup d'etat attempt, organized by his friend Simon Mann. The charges were related to possible funding and logistical assistance in relation to the attempted coup aimed at toppling President Obiang. Thatcher was then fined 3 million South African rands, that's £215,000, and received a 4-year suspended jail sentence. However, coup plots by Britain are not restricted to those against other nations. The 16 March marks the anniversary of the former British Prime Minister Harold Wilson. His resignation has never been fully explained, while not many are aware of the facts leading to a conclusion of plans to topple him in a coup d'etat. Unfortunately, there are just fragments of information about conspiracies against Wilson. However, as time has passed, more evidence has come to light that a group of MI5 officers had planned to overthrow Wilson and had even discussed their plot with Lord Louis Mountbatten, a cousin of the Queen, an Admiral of the Fleet equivalent to a Field Marshal, and the last Viceroy of India.
In our next program, we will go deeper into the details of the British Queen's favourite cousin's involvement in a coup plot right in the heart of London. British Chancellor George Osborne has just announced his latest public spending review for the years 2015 and 16. In this review, he skirts over the dire economic situation facing British capitalism. Instead, Osborne continues his war against the poor of British society while making yet more massive cuts to public services.
Order! Order! Can I just say... Order. No help from the honourable gentleman is required. He wouldn't have the foggiest idea where to start. Let me just say to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, there is a way in which these matters are handled, and it's not by the minister responding to questions, posing a series of questions. It's in breach of parliamentary protocol, it's not proper, and it must stop straight away. And others, including at the very highest level, ought to take note of that for future weeks. Let's be clear about it, the Chancellor.
One of Osborne's proposed measures is to force people who lose their job to wait 7 days before they can even make a claim for unemployment benefit. The government does not say how people are supposed to live off no income. In a classic piece of Orwellian doublespeak, Osborne said this measure is to help people stay off benefits and help those on benefits get back into work faster.
The jobs just aren't there. Companies can't afford to take on new people. There's just a lack of money everywhere.
We've got a long battle ahead of us. There's much to be done to sort the British economy out, and it requires an effort by all the residents of the country as well as the government. The government can't solve everything.
I'm a skilled person. I'm a decorator, a painter. I could do plumbing, bath. I got all my tools. My car is parked for 2 years. My car is parked in the back of where I live because I cannot afford tax and insurance.
Young people that haven't got the same qualifications are suffering even more, so it's really difficult to be able to support them and to make sure that they leave at compulsory education with the same chances.
Another proposed measure, which plays openly to the racist elements in British society, is the requirement for claimants with poor English to improve their language skills as a condition of receiving welfare benefits. Spending on welfare benefits is to be further capped, which will enable the government to restrict eligibility for housing benefit and disability allowances. This package of further cuts to welfare benefits will save a mere £425 million.
It was our parents and our grandparents who, having fought the evils and defeated the evils of fascism at the end of the Second World War, came back determined to build a land fit for heroes. They built the welfare state. They created the National Health Service. They gave us universal education, all of which is now under attack by a government that has no mandate whatsoever to do.
If you look at the effect of the cuts that are being made. They're very profound indeed. And wherever you look, you see that these policies are eroding standards of living which over many centuries we built up by our own efforts.
Economists argue the welfare cuts of the government will drive millions of people further into poverty and misery, while the wealth gap in British society continues to grow unabated. The richest 1% will benefit from falling levels of corporation tax and income tax. Their ill-gotten gains will in most cases be sent to one of the many tax havens operating through the City of London.
Over £120 billion in corporate tax is not collected by this government. And then we have the kind of corporate tax evasion where multi-million pound companies are able to employ very high-flying lawyers and accountants who help them evade paying their tax. And a contribution of all of those things, plus this government's incompetence, has given rise to the fastest growing wealth inequality gap in Europe, I think.
Meanwhile, there is talk that the new Bank of England chief, Mark Carney, may unleash yet more welfare payments to the rich in the form of more quantitative easing. Giving the super rich more money at 0% interest will only lead to more speculation and driving the stock market to yet more artificial highs. The real economy and working class people will see no benefit from these handouts to the super rich.
The so-called welfare scroungers in British society are ordinary working class people who are being driven over the edge by a brutal and uncaring government that ignores the crime wave that has swept through the City of London. Not surprisingly, the mainstream media refuses to call a spade, and calls the crime wave a series of victimless scandals. The LIBOR interest rate scandal was a clear case of gigantic fraud committed by the big banks, including Barclays and the Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS. Barclays paid a fine of over $400 million to the US government, while the banksters who committed this massive fraud escaped jail time. Has any bankster at RBS faced any criminal penalties for this trillion-dollar fraud? Next up, we have HSBC, which carried out money laundering for the Mexican drug cartels, which have killed tens of thousands of people. The HSBC banksters paid a fine to the US government and got off with no criminal charges. On top of this, there is the payment protection insurance scandal, where 34 million policies were missold by British banks and building societies.
We're here today to talk about LIBOR, a benchmark used in trillions of dollars worth of lending and derivatives transactions globally, and no doubt a very familiar term to everyone in this room. But until a few months ago, of course, LIBOR was virtually unknown to ordinary consumers and working people around Britain. So it is unfortunate, to say the least, that LIBOR's meteoric rise in the public consciousness has come about for the worst possible reasons. In June, we were faced with scandalous revelations that LIBOR has been subject to unacceptable attempts at manipulation by banks. One bank has been fined by the FSA and by authorities in the US for significant failings relating to LIBOR. Others have been fined by regulators in Japan. And investigations into other banks continue, both here and around the world. This abuse must be condemned in the strongest possible terms. The appalling behaviour behind it has further damaged the public image of a crucial industry, but one that's still struggling to restore the credibility in the public's mind after the global financial crisis, and which I feel particularly angry about. It's besmirched the reputation of the City of London.
This was something that the particular concern was dollar LIBOR, not so much sterling LIBOR or Euribor, but dollar LIBOR. And that's where the concern was. And right through the period 07, right through ultimately to October 08, it was moving up and down a great deal. And LIBOR was a bit like the temperature of a patient. It was how you measured the health of the system. So it was so volatile and moving up and down that everyone was thinking of ways in which they could introduce policies that would eventually bring LIBOR rates back down to where they normally were in relation to official policy rates.
People have been getting their money back, but where are the criminal charges against those who engaged in this massive fraud?
We have a number of significant cases that are pending trial. Those will be bigger and more complex than some of the cases we've taken forward. But clearly, the bigger and the more complex the case, the more impact it will have on the world outside. And given that what we are trying to achieve is deterrence, we want to ensure that those out there realise that there is a real risk of being caught and being convicted, then clearly they're important cases for us.
The coalition government put a lot of weight on its plans being in place in order to maintain a AAA rating. To the extent that they've lost the AAA rating, one source of pressure on the UK economy is the government now doing even more aggressive fiscal austerity in order to try and regain AAA rating.
This crime wave of the super rich is in sharp contrast to the suffering of millions of working class people whose only crime is that of poverty in a society that grows more intolerant of the poor by the day. How about that? Was it all informative enough for you? We hope it was. Well, that's all we have time for this week, unfortunately. But if you wish to discuss with us any issues you saw today or anything at all to do with Britain, do not hesitate to add us as a friend on Facebook. We go by the profile name UK Desk Press TV. We'll accept and we'll talk. Or if you prefer, you could send us your emails via britain@presstv.ir. It's our privilege to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with the content we show you. Also, we'd like to wish you all a happy and healthy Ramadan. See you on next week's episode of The Monarchy. Keep watching. Ciao. Poacher come with his poachers gone. Out in the woods to shoot someone.